Welcome to the KMUD Weekend News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we'll have in-depth coverage of last night's meeting over the Southern Humboldt Business Improvement District at the Mateel, issues with a county road requirement with the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors, disappearing eelgrass beds in Mendocino, and Ray Hamill has this week's sports report. But first, a rundown of today's top stories and headlines. This is KMUD News. We begin tonight with our package of highlights from last night's meeting at the Mateel Center in Redway over the proposed Southern Humboldt Business Improvement District. KMUD News reports. On Thursday, May 14th, a few dozen Southern Humboldt residents made their way to the Mateel Center in Redway for a meeting concerning the proposed Southern Humboldt Business Improvement District, also known by the acronym BID or BID. The meeting was hosted by a steering committee that is behind the proposed district. The conversations were sometimes heated and often lively. What is clear is that many Southern Humboldt residents are highly confused and concerned by the steering committee's plans and their perceived lack of knowledge over how such a district might operate in reality. The committee is proposing a 75-cent fee on every $100 of taxable sales within the Business Improvement District, which had confusingly been listed as gross sales in a previous press release. Much of the meeting focused on how the tax would be implemented and which businesses it would directly impact. Businesses would be responsible for collecting the fee from customers and submitting it to the county. We've collected some highlights to share with you on this broadcast. The audio of the full two-hour meeting is also available on our Facebook page and through streaming platforms. We'll start with committee member Trent Sanders introducing himself and some of the basic goals of the Business Improvement District and the steering committee.
Yeah, I'm Trent Sanders. I'm a third-generation Southern Humboldt resident, and I care about the community. We're all doing this as volunteers for free. We don't get paid. There's no nefarious dark money group behind this. It's just four or five locals that maybe lived here for generations that want to see a better community. The weed economy collapsed. That's not coming back. Incorporation's not going to happen. You have to have a police department, city council. That's millions and millions, and that's kind of a long-term fantasy. This is a kind of a shortcut to having the ability, like Laura said, to grab funds. So we don't, Garberville, Redway, Bembo can't get a grant. There's no money. All the money that we generate through property taxes and any other way goes to the general fund of the county, and they spend it however they see fit. We have no control. This is the first time Southern Humboldt will have some control of its own money within the boundaries of the district drawn. And not only do we get to collect the money and use it for beautification of Garberville, street cleaning, we get to, you know, get the grants. I mean, there's millions and millions of dollars of grants available if you have an entity that can actually get the grant.
Immediately, audience members were unimpressed with the proposal, with one audience member expressing concerns over the proposed district's budget and vague proposals.
Sure. Under destination development, it's again more very vague work, like, oh, we're going to have banners, and you know, but you don't spend $400,000 on signs and banners. I know signs are expensive, but they're not that expensive. And so I think that people, if it's really going to come out of their bottom line, they need to know, even about the landscaping, they didn't even say we're going to do landscaping. They said we're going to have landscaping incentives and initiatives. Well, what does that mean? You know, the wording is very flowery. And I think that people need some very concrete things because they don't have any extra money.
Another Southern Humboldt resident expressed concern over how funds might be allocated.
My question is, who is actually going to determine how all of our money is spent? Is this a group where we will actually have as a community the ability to participate in, or will this be a board members only participation for decision making? This is going to be really hard on my company. I don't know if I'm going to make it. And so I want to know that once this happens, I have a seat at the table. Otherwise, why am I paying into this if I don't have a seat at the table?
An audience member also pointed out that Southern Humboldt already has many organizations that promote tourism for the region.
I just want to say one thing. I think it's not true when Trent is saying that there's nobody else we're getting money for developing business. And we have a Chamber of Commerce. We have the Southern Humboldt Visitors Bureau. I just saw in an article about the bed tax that the chamber got $130,000 worth of bed tax in 1 year. I looked at their financials. I mean, they seem fine.
The committee and audience members then argued over which businesses would be impacted and how the proposed fee would be imposed. A member of the audience also pointed out language in the proposal that could be potentially punitive if a business is part of the proposed district and does not pay its fee on taxable sales.
Okay, everything in my business is a taxable item, as opposed to a chiropractor or a restaurant where their stuff isn't taxable. So how does that equal out?
You would have to put a 0.075% assessment on your items that are taxable and then pay that in. But
okay, so the question related to the previous question about changes on that segment. So there is a statement in there saying that somehow if your amount due is today, you will get penalized by 10% with the first 30 days. And that's big concerning for the businesses struggling already to meet their responsibilities.
The committee defended the punitive language by stating it was a standard contract that could be amended in the future. The committee also explained that the fee would likely be a standard line item on receipts and that such a proposal could help bring in grant money to the region for projects such as beautification.
Who enforces that? Does the county or do we?
So it would have to be wrote into the bylaws. It is a standard statement. The contract that you are reading is not the bylaws that will govern this if it should pass. So when Civitas made up that management district plan, they put that in there because it could happen. It could come in the bylaws, but it is not, none of that management plan, when it goes to the Board of Supervisors and if it gets passed by the Board of Supervisors, there'll be a lot of, because really right now it's nothing. And so there is no bylaws, there's no nothing, there's a steering committee.
It's a tax on stuff that's taxable, and it's an assessment on your register. So you put it, it's not a sales tax, it's an assessment, and you don't pay it, the business doesn't pay it out of their pocket. It goes on the line out of your register. So if you're charging $100, you're gonna charge sales tax, it's gonna be on there, and then below that will be the 75 cents for the district tax.
Grants are very dependent on, they are very specific. So if you identify that you want to beautify your town, you can apply for a grant like that. I will reference to Rio Del. You drive through Rio Del and it's beautiful. That was grant money that their city applied for. They received that funding for that beautification process.
Close to the end of the meeting, a local business owner expressed concern over the additional burdens of the fee.
You guys should understand a little bit more what businesses are dealing with.
We understand.
It is hard for businesses just to stay afloat.
This is why we're doing this district, because the locals aren't eating out. There isn't very much money in the local economy, and if we can market and advertise and form a district that can attract cars off the freeway and tourism, it brings people in to the restaurants and stores to buy more stuff. If you have 14... We have a world-class destination that's world-famous that we're not really capitalizing very well on, the Redwoods. There's millions of cars driving by. They're not stopping and spending the money because we're not telling them to stop and spend the money.
The proposed Southern Humboldt Business Improvement District has a deadline of October 1st to file their petition with the county. Citizens interested in getting in touch with the committee can email them at sohumbid, spelled S-O-H-U-M-B-I-D, @gmail.com. Again, that's sohumbid@gmail.com. If you would like to listen to the entire meeting, it has been reposted to our Facebook page. We apologize to those who had issues hearing our live video feed of this event. A big thank you to Lisa Music for providing our audio of the meeting. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. The developer of a Humboldt County senior housing project believes a county road requirement isn't fair, but a majority of the Board of Supervisors disagrees. Daniel Mintz reports.
Though Humboldt County supervisors appreciate the Humboldt Commons project's development of senior housing, a majority of them voted to hold fast on a road widening requirement requested to be waived. An appeal of the County Planning Commission's approval of the requirement was filed by the project's developer, Life Plan Humboldt, and denied at the May 12th Board of Supervisors meeting. The Life Plan Humboldt nonprofit organization will build 109 senior housing units in McKinleyville on a 15-acre parcel along Hiller Road. Hiller Road now consists of two vehicle travel lanes and shoulders bordered by grassy areas. To accommodate the addition of its project, Life Plan Humboldt is required to add a sidewalk and landscape buffer and a paved 13-foot-wide travel lane that will be temporarily used as a bicycle lane. Humboldt Commons project manager Emma Haskett described the agreed-to improvements being done and said the extra work of widening and paving the Hiller Road segment is not proportional to the project's effects.
So I'll walk you through what we've already committed to building. We have estimated around $250,000 for curb gutter and sidewalk. Nursery Way will cost around $550,000. Midtown Trail, another $175,000. In total, that adds up to almost $1 million in public infrastructure. The only thing we're contesting is an additional $200,000 for the road widening. That cost directly affects the affordability of a project designed to address the shortage of senior housing in Humboldt County. So here's where things get out of proportion. Humboldt Commons will contribute about 8 to 10% of the traffic on this segment of Hiller Road. Seniors typically drive less. They average about 2.4 trips per unit per day. That's 262 trips for our 109 units, compared to about 3,000 existing daily trips. But we're being asked to fund an entire additional travel lane. That just doesn't add up.
Life Plan Humboldt President Ann Lindsay said widening Hiller Road will actually reduce safety by adding width to a traffic corridor senior pedestrians will have to cross. She said, quote, "A scary road crossing could be dangerous and a deterrent to our marketing effort." But a majority of supervisors supported the Planning Commission's approval of the road requirement, including Supervisor Rex Bone.
I'm an old person, so I appreciate what you're doing out there. There's a lot of good stuff in what you're doing, and so I think that's great. And you guys, it's going to be a wonderful situation, and the city of McKinleyville is going to love to have you someday, it looks like. So, but I don't know if we can pass this up. No offense, and I mean, and you can take it any way you want, but we turned to our Planning Commission for so much. And we got some pretty smart people on our Planning Commission that are full-blown engineers and have done projects like this. And I think it was perfectly vetted, and I like the idea of abiding by what they brought forward. So I'm, no offense to anybody, but I think I'm going to support our Planning Commission and on this.
The project is in Supervisor Steve Madrone's district, and he supported the appeal and recommended its approval, saying the road widening mandate is unusual and more than what should be required.
I think what really stands out for me is that the applicant is absolutely willing to not only do the curbs, gutters, and sidewalks, which is what the normal requirement would be for any other development. It's really rare to include additional paving. More often than not, curbs, gutters, and sidewalks are put in and they butt up to existing paving. At least in my time on this board, I haven't seen a requirement to actually add in paving as a condition of the project. It does seem unproportional to me, as was discussed by the appellants.
With Board Chair Mike Wilson in support of the appeal and Supervisor Michelle Bushnell in favor of denying it, the vote of Supervisor Natalie Arroyo would sway the appeal's fate. Saying, quote, "This may cause some tension," Arroyo agreed with Bone's comments and described the requirement as absolutely reasonable. The board voted 3-2, with Wilson and Madrone dissenting, to deny the appeal. Also during the meeting, the county's enforcement of Measure S cannabis excise tax payment continued with approval of the revocation of 36 cultivation permits due to non-payment of the tax. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The eelgrass beds of the Albion River estuary which were once the biggest in Mendocino County, have disappeared. Elise Cox has the story.
The eelgrass beds in the Albion River estuary have always changed with the seasons. Some years they expanded. Other years they shrank. So when Gabrielle Levine first noticed that the underwater meadows were getting smaller, she wasn't immediately alarmed.
Yeah, and apparently it shifts its beds, which is where it likes to be.
We are standing on the banks of the Albion River, looking out at a shallow, muddy river bottom that's a vomit-colored brown. It used to be a shimmering, underwater meadow that flashed an ever-changing spectrum of blues and greens. Today, there is no eelgrass that I can see anywhere. Just mud. The eelgrass is gone.
And we, just a few days ago, took a boat right upriver looking for it and couldn't find any.
Levine is a retired physician who has spent years helping restore and protect land along the Albion River. She knows what an off-season looks like, and this, she says, is different. This is what it looks like when a keystone species blinks out. Marine ecologists agree. Researchers from Sonoma State University, who regularly work out of the nearby Albion Field Station, confirmed this spring that the estuary appears to have undergone a rapid and significant eelgrass decline. Brent Hughes, an associate professor of marine ecology, says this kind of sudden loss is deeply concerning.
Anytime you see a decline that's rapid and substantial, it's a big concern for many different reasons.
Scientists don't yet know exactly what has caused the die-off. Possible explanations include invasive green crabs, sediment buildup, warming water, pollution, disease, ocean acidification, or multiple stressors acting together. And researchers say the disappearance of eelgrass in the Albion River is part of a much larger crisis unfolding along the West Coast. Eelgrass may not look dramatic, but ecologists describe it as one of the most important habitats in coastal waters. The plants form dense underwater meadows that shelter juvenile salmon and Dungeness crab, provide spawning grounds for Pacific herring, stabilize shorelines, and improve water quality. Researchers also say eelgrass is remarkably efficient at storing carbon, even more efficient than forests or land, and can help buffer coastal waters against ocean acidification. Hughes says the ecological value of eelgrass is difficult to overstate.
When you lose them, it's kind of like the canary in the coal mine, that there's probably a larger issue going on.
By one measure, the world is losing a football field of seagrass, including eelgrass, every 30 minutes. The causes vary. Coastal development, nutrient pollution, warming oceans, boat traffic, and sediment runoff have all contributed to the declines. Levine says on the Albion River, an exploding population of green crabs played a role. The juveniles eat eelgrass, and the adults kill it when they forage. Federal agencies, including NOAA Fisheries, consider eelgrass a critical habitat for salmon and other marine species. But monitoring remains inconsistent. Hughes says one of the biggest problems is that many eelgrass beds, including Albion's, are rarely surveyed.
That's critical information that we just don't have. There's been surveys, but, you know, they're sporadic. They're not very frequent. I think the last one was 10 years ago.
The Albion River estuary historically supported the largest eelgrass meadow in Mendocino County. But today, Levine says, the river looks completely different.
Yeah, I've been here 10 years and seen a lot of changes, and not good ones.
She says the mudflats are increasingly exposed at low tide, baking in the sun, and eelgrass can only grow underwater. As the eelgrass retreated, green crabs seem to multiply. Levine says the crabs are still there, though their numbers also appear to be dwindling. Scientists say there is still reason for hope. In places like Elkhorn Slough and Morro Bay, eelgrass has recovered after researchers identified and reduced underlying stressors that were damaging the ecosystem.
You know what we need? It's sea otters. That's what they did in Elkhorn Slough, and it worked.
Yeah, yeah, they're really good at catching them.
They like crabs.
But Hughes cautions that restoration can only succeed if scientists first understand what caused the decline. For now, researchers say the immediate priority is documentation and monitoring. Hughes says local residents can play an important role by recording changes in water temperature, sediment, and habitat conditions, and by alerting state and federal agencies. Levine says she believes the estuary can recover. She points to a few remaining strands of eelgrass near the river bottom. "I have to look closely, but they are there." The plants, she says, are still hanging on.
Still trying.
Okay.
We saw some. It's still trying, so it could be saved.
For KMUD News and MendoLocal.News, I'm Elise Cox.
In this week's sports report, Ray Hamill brings us details of how this week's postseason Charles Lakin tournament is shaping up and who will play for the championship, as well as why it was a big week for local high school swimmers, news of some changes in the Humboldt Crabs dugout this summer, and who starred at last weekend's HDN championships in track and field.
The 2026 Charles Lakin Tournament Championship game lineups have been finalized after an exciting week of action in the HDNL postseason tournament. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on Friday night's Lakin finals in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including some big news for the Humboldt Crabs, a look back at this year's HDNL Track and Field Championships, why it was a particularly noteworthy week for some local high school swimmers, where one standout College of the Redwoods student athlete is taking her talents next, and news of a couple of coaching changes at Cal Poly Humboldt. But first up, it's been a busy week for the HDNL baseball and softball teams at the annual postseason Charles Lakin Tournament. The tournament got underway on Tuesday, with the softball teams competing at the Arcata Sports Complex and the baseball teams playing at the Arcata Ballpark. Tuesday's opening round featured four games between the numbers 2 and 3 seeds from both the Big 5 and Little 4. After being included in the tournament lineup at the last minute, the Eureka girls opened with a come-from-behind 6-4 win over Hoopa. The Loggers finished fourth in the Big 5, but the number 3-seeded Del Norte girls were unable to compete due to scheduling conflicts for their players, so Eureka was added to the field as a replacement. In the other softball tournament opening round game on Tuesday, the defending tournament champion Fortuna Huskies opened with a comfortable 13-3 win over Ferndale in 5 innings. In baseball tournament action on Tuesday, Del Norte and Eureka advanced to the semifinals with victories over a pair of Little 4 opponents. The Warriors faced off against Ferndale and won 11-3, while the Loggers shut out South Fork 6-0 later in the day. In Thursday's semifinals, the Fortuna girls continued to roll with a 13-12 win over Little 4 champion South Fork, while Eureka defeated Big 5 champion McKinleyville 6-4. In the baseball tournament semifinals, McKinleyville defeated Del Norte 5-1, and Eureka got the better of crosstown rival St. Bernard's 8-0. Switching gears, the Humboldt Crab season is now just 2 weeks away, a sure sign that summer is just around the corner. The Crabs will open with a 3-game series against the Novato Knicks, with Game 1 set for May 29th at the Arcata Ballpark. This year sees some changes in the dugout for the longtime local summer collegiate team, with new manager Jeff Giacomini taking over from Robin Guyver, who stepped down at the end of the 2025 season. Giacomini is a former Crabs player and longtime assistant coach who is a member of the club's Hall of Fame. This year, he will be joined in the dugout by a couple of assistant coaches whom local fans know well. St. Bernard's head coach Matt Tomlin will join Giacomini's staff as the new pitching coach, while Eureka High head coach Tommy Gale will be the team's new hybrid pitching and hitting coach. Tomlin brings an impressive resume to the Arcata ballpark, having won state titles for St. Bernard's in both football and girls basketball, as well as a NorCal title in baseball. Tomlin has a lifetime association with the Crabs, having served as a bat boy in the late 1980s and then as a player for three summers in the late 90s. He was inducted into the Crabs Hall of Fame 2 years ago. Gale, meanwhile, is also a former Crabs player who played with the team in 2010. He has previously worked alongside Giacomini with the Humboldt B-52s and with the Eureka Loggers. In local high school track and field, meanwhile, some of the best athletes in the HDNL travel to Crescent City on Saturday to compete in the 2026 League Championships. And it was a particularly good day for the Eureka Loggers, who took home team championships in boys and girls action. Junior Bo Landry won three individual events for the Loggers, placing first in the boys' 110-meter hurdles, the long jump and the triple jump. Fortuna senior Cavi Bolden was also a three-time winner on the day, placing first in the 100 and 200 meter sprints, as well as part of the 4x100 meter relay winning team. Arcata senior Skylar Collenberg also enjoyed a big day, placing first in both the shot put and discus. In the girls' competition, Eureka sophomore Natalie Wiley also won three events, the 100 meter hurdles, the 300 meter hurdles, and as part of the Loggers 4x400 meter relay team. St. Bernard's freshman Lulu Vanuku won the girls 100 meters, while Eureka's Elizabeth Rominger placed first in the 200 meters. In local high school swimming, meanwhile, five HDNL swimmers qualified for last weekend's NCS Championships in Novato, including Eureka junior Amelia Baugh, who reached the final in the 200-yard freestyle and placed 15th overall. She became the first ever logger to reach an NCS swimming final. Arcata's Yogi True, Hook Russell, Henry Sealer, and Theodore Demirev qualified for the Section Championships in the 200-meter relay, with Russell also qualifying for the 200 individual medley and placing 15th. Switching gears, it was a big week for the College of the Redwoods women's basketball team. Sophomore guard Nora Talty out of Arcata High announced that she will be taking her talents to a four-year program, committing her future to the Oregon Institute of Technology women's team. Talty played a pivotal role for CR this past winter, leading the team in scoring and rebounds. CR also announced that Ferndale senior Madison Gossie will play for the Redwoods women next winter after signing her letter of intent to compete at the JC level. Gossie is one of two Ferndale players to recently announce that they will be continuing their playing careers on the college courts, with her teammate Michaela Ellsmore taking her talents to College of Marin. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, Cal Poly Humboldt Athletics announced two new coach hirings this week. Former San Francisco State assistant coach Anthony Mancini has been brought in to coach the Jacks men's wrestling team, while Michael Schroer has been hired as full-time men's and women's cross-country coach. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Michael McCaskill, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Frederico, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporters for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz, Elise Cox, and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now on podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KMUD News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Are there stories we're missing or that you're curious about? You can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Sikyon, Wailaki, Wiyut, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.